This week on Dana's Low Carb for Life, we talk about low carb cold care, the difference between jumping right in and getting feet wet with your dietary program versus taking it in little steps, and plateau busting. So stick around. You are listening to Dana's Low Carb for Life. Hey, gang. Welcome to episode 13 of Dana's Low Carb for Life, brought to you by CarbSmart.com, your smart choice for a low-carb lifestyle. I've never believed 13 was an unlucky number. I got married on the 13th, and that sure wasn't unlucky, but maybe in this case it is, since I have a nasty cold right now. If you're wondering what happened to my voice, that's it, and you may hear the occasional sniffle or cough on this podcast. As a result of that, I thought I'd cover low-carb cold care this week, even though it's not exactly seasonal. I'll talk about folks who like to plunge right into their new dietary plan, both feet first, versus those who want to get their feet wet with one change at a time. And I'm going to offer some ideas for the most impactful changes you can make. Plus, of course, we'll have an episode of Low Carb Voices where we're going to talk about plateaus. You'll sure want to stick around for that. But first, let me talk about colds and get it out of the way, since I sound so awful. I know it's spring here in the Northern Hemisphere, and so it is not officially cold season, but as I record this, you can tell that I have a scratchy, sore throat and a hacky cough, and, you know, it just doesn't sound so great. So, I did think it would be timely to fill you in on low-carb cold care. Low-carb cold care. Yep. There are actually some potential pitfalls in cold care, so let me help you skirt them. First of all, and very importantly, please do not decide, oh, I'm sick, I deserve pampering, I may as well go off my diet. Nutritionists from Dr. Atkins to Ann Louise Gittleman have long insisted that eating sugar will weaken your immune system, and indeed, I found, with a little research, a 1995 study that showed that the activity of immune system cells called leukocytes decreases significantly when your blood sugar levels rise. So, if there's any chance at all that eating a lot of carbs is going to keep you sick longer, you really don't want to do that. By the way, that also means that people who give their kids the hand sanitizer before feeding them cookies and soda pop, really on the wrong track to keeping the kids healthy. Just as important, if you've been low-carb for even a few weeks, you've probably noticed a dramatic increase in your energy level. Now, do you really want to give yourself one of those energy-sapping blood sugar crashes that come after the blood sugar rush? Talk about feeling wretched. You already feel bad enough. Don't do that. And here are some ideas for cold care while staying low-carb. First of all, remember, please, juice is not your friend. It is a great way to take in tons of sugar without any of the fiber that would buffer the absorption if you were to just eat the fruit. Even orange juice, not your friend when you have a cold, or in general. Take vitamin C pills, folks. They got no sugar unless you get the chewables. Don't get the chewables. Just swallow the vitamin C pills and hydrate with sugar-free beverages. You should hydrate during a cold or flu. Always very important. Hot beverages are soothing to a scratchy throat. In fact, I have a cup of tea by me right here. And they do also help loosen chest congestion, which I have. Tea is my obvious choice, she said, with the cup of tea sitting close to hand. And if you're used to honey in your tea while you're sick, you need to be aware that just one teaspoon of honey has 5.7 grams of carbohydrate in it, all of it pure sugar. Oh, it doesn't matter that it's natural sugar, it's sugar. You can get sugar-free imitation honey. Our sponsor, CarbSmart, carries Nature's Hollow brand sugar-free imitation honey. Nature's Hollow gets 4 stars from the customers at CarbSmart.com, but it is made with xylitol, which is good for people, but extremely toxic to dogs. So I'm not going to have that brand in my house because I have a pug who likes to steal food, and I just can't take the risk. I have tried a brand called Honey Tree, and I did think it quite good. The Honey Tree imitation honey is made with maltitol, so there's more of a risk of some social offense with the Honey Tree, but then you're going to be home being sick anyway. there is far less risk to my dogs, so that would be my choice. Honey Tree sugar-free imitation honey shows up on the Walmart website, and so I called the Honey Tree company to see whether it is indeed available at most Walmarts. They said it's available at 3,000 Walmarts nationwide. It's also available at HEB stores in Texas and at Meijer stores in the Great Lakes region. You can get it through Amazon.com, but you have to buy 12 bottles at a time. You could, of course, get some low-carb friends together and co-op an order, but the nice people at HoneyTree.com say that if you want to buy just one bottle of their imitation honey at a time, you can go to Alice.com. And they sell it. You can also use that sugar-free imitation honey to make a cup of sugar-free hot lemonade. Just stir a little bit of lemon juice and some of the sugar-free imitation honey into a cup of hot water. Lemon juice is very low in sugar, so it's acceptable. This can be very soothing to the throat. I, years ago, had the very great good fortune to work for 5 years with a brilliant doctor from Shanghai whose name was Chi Chao. And Chi Chao's favorite prescription for colds was ginger tea. She taught me to simmer about a tablespoon of powdered ginger in a mug's worth of water for about 5 minutes. You put, you know, you fill up your mug with water, dump it in a little saucepan, put in a tablespoon of powdered ginger, simmer it for about 5 minutes, then let the ginger settle to the bottom, pour off the liquid back into your mug, sweeten it with that same imitation honey or any other sugar-free sweetener you like, and sip it down. Chi said that this ginger tea would encourage your body to sweat, which she thought was a very good thing. And she said that I should drink ginger tea, put on 2 sweatsuits, one over the other, bundle up in a blanket over that, and sweat and sweat and sweat. And she said this was a way of accentuating the fever response. You don't want to fight a fever. She said you wanted to accentuate it because it helps your body kill the germs. I don't know. It does seem to speed up a cold for me. So that's advice from my Chinese doctor friend. Take it for what it's worth. I think she was a genius. Beware of cold medicine. Cough syrups, liquids like NyQuil have a lot of sugar in them. Buy NyQuil, DayQuil, anything like that in soft gel capsules instead because they don't have the sugar in them. Pharmacies do carry sugar-free cough syrup. Generally, you can get both the cough suppressant kind and the kind with the guaifenesin in it that loosens up chest congestion, you know, the expectorant kind. These are often labeled diabetic formula, and they work just as well as sugary cough syrup, so that's what we always keep in the house. You can also find sugar-free cough drops, including the kind with menthol and eucalyptus that also help to open up a stuffy nose. Again, your best bet to get these is in an actual pharmacy, not at the grocery store or the discount store. Be aware that sugar-free cough drops are generally made with maltitol, again, so the potential for gastric problems with overuse does exist. We all know that chicken soup is a standard for colds, but of course, most packaged chicken soups have noodles or rice in them. If you just must have the canned chicken soup your mommy made you when you had a cold when you were a kid, you should know that Campbell's chicken noodle soup has 8 grams of carb per serving, a serving being half a can's worth. That's not great, but, you know, there are worse things you could eat. Chicken and rice has 7 grams of carb. Better, though, far better, is to heat some chicken broth. Good store-bought chicken broth will do, although the healing powers of homemade chicken broth are legendary. And heat it with the tofu shirataki noodles. Heat it with the tofu shirataki noodles and a diced boneless skinless chicken breast or thigh. And you just let it simmer until the chicken's done. Shouldn't take more than 10 minutes of simmering. And then if you want, you could also dissolve a little unflavored gelatin powder in store-bought broth to make it a little bit closer to the homemade bone broth, both in texture and in nutritional value. I like to keep homemade chicken broth in the freezer against the day I don't feel well. If there's a local Chinese restaurant that delivers, consider sending out for egg drop or hot and sour soup. Recipes for these vary. They both tend to be lower carb and higher protein than canned chicken noodle soups. Hot and sour soup is my favorite cold cure, soup because the hot peppers also tend to clear out my nose. If you can't get delivery, boxed or canned chicken broth can make egg drop soup really quickly and easily. You can make it in your weakened condition, really. It's that easy. I'm going to put the recipe up on the show page at danaslowcarbforlife.com so you can make your very own egg drop soup. And, of course, you don't have to wait to be sick to make egg drop soup. Egg drop soup's always nice. Okay, let's move along. In a few minutes, we're going to do low-carb voices, and we'll be talking about plateaus. But first, I would like to talk about two kinds of people. We all know that there are two kinds of people in the world, but there are roughly 5 million different iterations of what those two kinds of people are, because everybody always says, oh, there's two kinds of people in this world, and then they all have their idea of what those two kinds of people are. Well, writing, as I do, about diet, nutrition, health, all that stuff, one of the most important sets of two kinds of people that I see are the plunge in with both feet people versus what I would call the incrementalists. Now, I'm pretty much a plunge in with both feet kind of girl. When, at the age of 19, I read my first nutrition book and got the idea that perhaps, just perhaps, all that sugar I've been pounding all those years might just be the cause of what I thought were my emotional problems, I gave up both sugar and white flour overnight pretty much entirely. I didn't even eat ketchup or Worcestershire sauce for roughly 3 years. When I went low-carb in 1995, I simply stopped eating concentrated carbs entirely. No bread, potatoes, pasta, rice, cereal, any of that stuff, nothing made with flour, no sweets, again, overnight. Just, that's it, no more. Not doing this anymore. On the other hand, there are people who like to try one change, see how it goes, and then try another. They're more comfortable getting their feet wet first. You know, they don't want to just go whole hog. Now, I don't think one approach is necessarily better than the other. They're two different personality types, that's all, and they're comfortable with different approaches. The important thing for the incrementalists to understand, however, is that unlike the plunge right in people, they may not see the really exciting big changes so many of us see in the first weeks of low carbing, the ones that get us really, really stoked and motivated to continue. You know, those of us who have really just slashed the carbs from our diets overnight know that a week later your energy level is sky high, you've already lost 6 or 7 pounds, and your blood pressure is normalized and you feel great. And the changes with an incremental approach are not likely to be that dramatic. So the incrementalists need to be clear that they have to look for more modest changes and appreciate those changes and let this be just a first step, which is what it needs to be, rather than saying, oh, but I made this one change and it didn't get me the results I wanted, so what's the point? Well, your one step isn't everything. That's just fooling yourself, and it's self-defeating. So, if you're an incrementalist, be aware of this pitfall. I might add that you can always go the both feet in thing with the idea that there's a time limit. That's what I did actually when I gave up sugar when I was 19. I told myself, I'm going to give up sugar and white flour for 2 weeks. I'll do it for 2 weeks and see how I feel. And by 3 days in, the change was so dramatic that I never went back. But if you tell yourself, well, you know, I can do this for 2 weeks and see how I feel, you may very well find yourself so excited you don't go back. But if you still want to do it a bit at a time, in the interests of you getting some real results from those first incremental changes, I would like to suggest a couple of good choices for a first step. Either one of these first steps should net you some kind of noticeable result. Note, I did not say you'll lose 15 pounds in the first month, or your whole life will be changed, or all your health problems will go away, or anything like that. Again, these are modest changes. Please expect modest results. Still, they are powerful enough changes that you should notice at least some beneficial result by the time you've stuck with them for 3 weeks to a month. You should notice something. One possible change is to give up all sugary beverages. Far and away, sugary beverages are the biggest source of sugar in the American diet, and if you give these up, you will be cutting the majority of the sugar out of your diet. That is assuming you're one of the majority of Americans who drink a lot of this stuff. In the sugary beverage category, I include not only soda, but sports drinks, energy drinks, sugar-sweetened vitamin waters, and other supposed health drinks, sweet tea, bottled sweetened teas, sweet-tasting cocktails, sweet wine, coffee drinks like lattes and mochaccinos, and yes, juices and juice drinks. Natural sugar is still sugar, and the fructose in fruit juice is no better for you than the fructose in soda pop. Your body cannot tell the difference between a molecule of fructose from fruit juice and a molecule of fructose from soda pop. I might add carrot juice is extremely sugary as well, so don't lie to yourself and say, oh, but she said fruit juice. Carrots are vegetables, so carrot juice is okay. No. If it tastes sweet and it's not artificially sweetened or one of the new breed of sugar-free beverages that are using erythritol and stevia, like Zevia and Blue Sky Free sodas, it's out. Get rid of it. So what are you going to drink instead? Diet soda, if you absolutely must. But be aware that for many people, diet soda seems to cause cravings and stall weight loss. Two, you should have an eye to eventually weaning yourself away from the need for everything you drink to be sweetened. Still, I think if diet soda is, for now, what lets you give up sugary soda, that's a good trade-off. You could try the new all-natural diet sodas I mentioned. Again, those are Zevia and Blue Sky Free. Be aware that these are quite pricey, several times the price of artificially sweetened diet sodas that you get at the grocery store. But then again, perhaps the price will help you moderate your consumption. Never a bad thing. Iced tea is a great choice for a cold beverage. I like black tea with nothing in it. I just use plain instant tea. But you can sweeten your iced tea with artificial sweetener of your choice, or if you prefer, with stevia. The sugar alcohols, like maltitol and erythritol and like that, and the erythritol blends, like Truvia, don't stir in and dissolve anywhere near as easily as the artificial sweeteners or the straight stevia. So they're probably not the best choice in iced tea. If you simply have to have your coffee drinks, see if your local coffee shop has sugar-free syrups. The three big coffee flavoring syrup companies, Da Vinci, Torani, and Monin, all make sugar-free versions of a lot of their syrups. Da Vinci has the biggest line. If your local Starbucks or whatever has your favorite flavor of syrup and sugar-free, that's great. Just order your drink with that. If not, buy a bottle. Buy a couple. Buy some caramel or vanilla or chocolate or dulce de leche syrup. Sugar-free. Get them online if you have to. CarbSmart carries the whole Da Vinci line of sugar-free syrups. And make your own coffee drinks at home. You'll be dazzled by how much money you save. I can't believe, actually, that people spend so much money on coffee now. You know, the old saying when I was a kid was that in a quarter will get me a cup of coffee. And now around here we joke that in $5 will get me a cup of coffee at Starbucks. If you are a drinker, and I am one of you, you will need to quit all the sweet stuff. No apple teenies, no caramel teenies, no choco teenies. Yes, these all have sugar in them, as do mixed sweet mixed drinks like margaritas and the strawberry daiquiris and pina coladas. All of that has sugar in it. The basic rule of thumb, again, is if it tastes sweet and it's not artificially sweetened, it's got sugar in it. All the sweet liqueurs like Bailey's Irish Cream, or Kahlua, or Midori, those all have sugar in it. Also, the Alco Pops, stuff like hard lemonade and coolers and all, are also loaded with sugar. So, I'm sorry, it's time you learn to drink like a grown-up. Dry wine, or hard liquor, or possibly a rum and Diet Coke. As for energy drinks, I understand there are some sugar-free varieties out there. I actually have never tried a Red Bull, a Monster, a Rockstar. These all evolved long after I had gone low carb. I just never bothered. But if you are hooked, look for the sugar-free varieties. Again, I can't say I think they're a great idea, but the sugar-free ones are better than the ones with sugar in them. 5-Hour Energy actually has no sugar, and it is mostly vitamins, amino acids, and caffeine. I have not tried it. But I have read the label, and I find the ingredients unobjectionable, so you might want to consider that. Or you could be a real dinosaur like me and just have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee or, you know, two. Still, be aware that getting all this sugar from beverages out of your diet should result, after a few weeks, in increased rather than decreased energy. Because sugar is not energy food, it is anti-energy food. Now, depending on how much sugary stuff you've been drinking up till now, you may also find that simply giving up sugar beverages is enough that you start losing weight. It's not a given, but it has happened to many people I know that this one change will cause weight loss, and who knows, you may end up like me, a reformed tab addict who now cannot bear to drink sweetened junk. I cannot bear soda pop, not even sugar-free soda pop, not even the natural or sugar-free soda pop like Zevia and Blue Sky Free. I just find all that stuff so sweet it's disgusting. It can happen, folks. I used to drink 12 to 18 cans of pop a day. I don't do it anymore. I just, gross. A second really great increment you could try is this. Simply start having a big, high-protein, low-carb breakfast every single day. Eggs, meat, cheese, a sugar-free smoothie with a scoop of vanilla whey protein. Whatever it is, go very low-carb. No toast, no cereal, no oatmeal. Obviously no sweet rolls or donuts or anything, but get at least 20 grams of protein. More sure wouldn't hurt. By the way, that's roughly 3 eggs worth of protein. Again, skip all the toast, donuts, pastries, muffins, bagels, cereal, oatmeal, no juice, and no sugar in your coffee or other beverage. Now, if you're taking the increment of having protein for breakfast every day, you're not necessarily doing the no sugar beverages all day long thing, although obviously that would be great. But if you're having a low-carb breakfast, that also includes not having a sugar beverage. A half a grapefruit or a handful of strawberries are okay. Those are two very low-sugar choices for fruit. What is having this carb-free or very low-carb, high-protein, high-fat breakfast going to do for you? It is going to reduce your hunger and increase your energy for the whole blessed day. You are going to be very surprised when 10 a.m. rolls around and you discover that you are not craving something from the vending machine. You are not thinking about the donuts in the break room. You're just not hungry. At lunch, you're going to find it way easier to skip the fries and get the salad instead. You may not even have an appetite for lunch. You may find that you're just not hungry yet. And if that's the case, skip it. What the heck? Indeed, you will find it far easier to walk past junk food in general all day long, because you will very simply be far, far less hungry all day long from this one simple change of having protein and fat for breakfast without any carbs. There are very few things that improve your chances of making smart food choices, like not being ravenous all the time. Indeed, one study on the effect of a low-carb breakfast on hunger as opposed to the effect of higher-carb breakfasts, they did test against higher-carb breakfasts with the same calorie count, demonstrated a spontaneous 81% reduction in calories from this one change alone. Now, I'm not a calories in, calories out person, because I believe that the really important question is calories of what? But 81% fewer calories is bound to translate into a whole lot less sugary, starchy, carby, processed garbage, and much better food choices all the way around. And that can only be a very good thing. And furthermore, in the context of carbohydrate restriction, a few less calories probably going to add up to more weight loss than a few more. Let me note here that even if you're not a breakfast person, you can use this approach. I generally don't eat for at least a few hours after I get up. I know they keep telling you, oh, you have to eat within an hour of getting up. I try to do a very mild form of intermittent fasting by not eating from 8 o'clock at night till around 11 or 12 the next day. I then have a big breakfast with plenty of protein and fat. I often have as much as 3 sausage patties and 3 fried eggs, but I eat virtually no carbohydrate, and I'm usually full well past lunch until supper time. If, like so many people, you have to leave the house in the morning, unlike us people who write for a living and get to hang around, take along boiled eggs, individually wrapped cheese bites, any other high-protein, high-fat, low-carb food that appeals to you for breakfast. You could take a smoothie in a thermos. The point is that the first meal of your day should be loaded with protein, high in fat, but very low in carbohydrate. High, by the way, in natural and preferably saturated fat. So long as you do that, the hunger magic is going to work. Either one of these two incremental changes, the no sugary beverages or the high protein, high fat, low carb breakfast, should have a big enough impact to inspire you to continue on to further steps like, say, giving up all grains or going gluten-free or refusing to eat anything with hydrogenated vegetable oil, whatever it is, cutting back your carbs to ketogenic levels, which is the one I would suggest. If you have been toying with the idea of making a change toward low carb, but doing it all at once was too overwhelming, and you decide to try one of these changes instead, please let us all know how it goes. Okay. Time for Low Carb Voices. This week's question comes from Carol in Detroit, and it's on one of our most vexing and perplexing problems, the plateau. Give a listen.
Hi, Dana. This is Carol from Detroit. I love your show. I called earlier, I guess, when you first started up, my second call. Hey, have a question regarding plateaus, and I don't know if you've covered this in the well, I've listened to all the shows, so I don't think that you've covered this. At any rate, I'm running into a problem with the plateau. I've been low-carbing for about 2 months now, and at the beginning, I was losing almost a pound a day. I've been at the same weight for probably about a month now, and I'm getting a little discouraged. I'm still loving the low-carb lifestyle, but just wanted you to talk me through this plateau. I guess part of it has to do with the point that I didn't have much to lose in the first place, and now I'm down to the last 5 or 6 pounds, and I just can't get the scale to move. So if you can talk me through that and let me know what to do. I'm still doing the same things that I was doing to lose the initial weight, so I'm not sure what's going on. But if you could give me some advice or encouragement about that, that would be good. Keep up the good work. Loving your show. You're a blessing to all of us low-carbers. And look forward to hearing back from you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling again, Carol. It's good to hear from you. Now, I have to confess, I don't have one brilliant solution to the plateau problem, or I would be a few pounds slimmer myself. But, hey, that never stopped me from offering opinions and ideas, now did it. Thoughts first, then a few strategies. First of all, I have long believed that while we have a lot of control over our bodies, we do not have total control. Your body may simply have a different idea than you do of what your ideal weight is. That doesn't make it impossible to lose another 5 pounds. It will make it harder. Secondly, while losing a pound a day is not uncommon at the beginning of a low-carb diet, it is very rare for that rate of loss to persist after, you know, a few months. Please keep in mind that for the first couple of weeks, you were losing all your excess water along with your body fat. A few pounds a week is considerably more common after a month or two. Remember, there's no finish line. Even after you knock off the final 5 pounds, you will have to continue low-carbing to keep the weight off and to maintain the health benefits. So, you know, if you're thinking, oh, I've got to lose the last 5 so I can go off my diet, you know just as well as I do what a bad idea that is. Okay, moving along to some strategies. First of all, you need to look for hidden confounding factors. You don't say how old you are, Carol, but take it from a 52-year-old. Perimenopause and menopause are notorious for making weight loss difficult. Jackie Eberstein, who was Dr. Atkins' right-hand woman for decades, tells me that it also makes blood sugar control harder for those of us who have problems with that. I know that when I let myself run out of my bioidentical progesterone, I automatically bump up a few pounds. That's what reminds me to go get some. You might see if you can get a hormone assay. This is a simple saliva test. And see whether your hormones are properly balanced. Speaking of blood sugar, make sure you don't have any underlying problems with blood sugar. I figured my blood sugar was okay because my A1C levels, which are the measure of blood sugar over time, were absolutely normal, but it turns out I run high fasting blood sugar, even though overall my blood sugar is indeed normal. This is despite rarely eating more than 20 to 25 grams of carb per day. My doctor says it's because my liver is cranking out too much sugar while I'm sleeping at night in response to my having high cortisol levels. high cortisol levels being the reason for my notorious insomnia problems, and that this in turn means that my insulin is still a tad high. Now, I'm now medicated for this problem. I've started taking metformin and also a new medication called Cyclocet, and I have been finding it far easier to keep my weight off, and I have dropped a few pounds spontaneously just from taking those drugs and not a whole lot of change otherwise. Cortisol, again, is something you can test for with a saliva test, and it really wouldn't hurt to get a glucometer and check your fasting blood glucose when you wake up. It should be between 80 and 100. If it's higher than that, talk to somebody about it and see if you, too, have some problems with your liver creating sugar while you're asleep. While you've got that glucometer, and by the way, if you haven't bought a glucometer yet, buy it according to the price of the test strips. That's the expensive part. The meters are not that expensive. The test strips are very expensive. I bought a CVS store brand meter because the strips were the cheapest in the store. Take your postprandial blood sugar reading now and then. According to Dr. William Davis of the HeartScan blog, your blood sugar 1 hour after you finish eating should be absolutely no higher than 120. If it's higher, you're eating too many carbs, and you need to take a close look at what it was in your meal that jacked up your blood sugar. Be aware that there are plenty of medications that mess up weight loss or even cause weight gain. Steroids are a terrible problem. My sister's an asthmatic and has put on weight many times when she's had to take prednisone. A lot of antidepressants have weight gain among their side effects. There's one exception that I know of, Wellbutrin, does not cause weight gain and indeed may cause weight loss, but it's not right for everyone. I've known some people for whom it was disastrous. So, that's something you got to work out with your doctor. And I'm not suggesting that anybody who's on an antidepressant that causes weight gain should necessarily go off it. That's, a case-by-case basis. Birth control pills are notorious for causing weight gain, as are most diabetic medications, except the two I already mentioned, metformin and Cyclocet. Cyclocet is a very new medication. Talk to your pharmacist about whether you're on any medication that could be hampering your weight loss, since this was a very incomplete list. So, having looked at possible underlying causes for your resistance to your weight loss, here are some strategies. First of all, attention is a very powerful tool. So, try keeping track of everything you eat. When I do this, I tend to lose slowly. It certainly will help. I use fitday.com when I'm keeping track. It's available for free online, again, at fitday.com. But there are plenty of apps you could get for a smartphone that would do the same thing and let you carry your food log with you. Or, of course, if you have a food log, you could probably log into Fitday. I would recommend an app for you, but I don't have a smartphone, so I'm clueless. While you're at it and keeping track, make sure you're eating a high-fat diet. Yes, I did say a high-fat diet. Your low-carb diet should be a high-fat diet, not a high-protein diet. It should be a moderate-protein diet because fat is your most important fuel, and fat actually is less likely to cause a release of insulin than protein is. So I shoot for between 65 and 75% of my calories from fat. Keep an eye out for hidden carbs. Count anything that says it has 0 grams of carbohydrate per serving as a half a gram, and anything that says less than 1 gram per serving as 1 gram. It is very, very common for food processors to deliberately manipulate the serving size to be able to legally put 0 grams or less than 1 gram on the package. For instance, granular Splenda actually has about 24 grams of carbohydrate per cup, but because the serving size is a teaspoon, it comes in at less than half a gram, just under half a gram per teaspoon, and they can list it as zero. Do not trust the manufacturer's net carb counts on low-carb products. The food processors will come up with all sorts of reasons why their carbs don't count. Yes, you can subtract fiber, that's fine, but, for instance, maltitol in sugar-free sweets, I count 50% of the maltitol grams because that's roughly what you absorb from maltitol. It's an improvement over sugar, but it's definitely not carb-free. If you've been eating the Dreamfields pasta, Test your blood sugar after you eat it. I know that it jacks my blood sugar up more than the label would suggest. Indeed, it is a great idea to axe the processed low-carb stuff entirely if you're having a plateau. And I say that as someone whose show is sponsored by CarbSmart, a low-carb e-tailer. When you're having trouble losing, you really can't afford stuff like reduced-carb tortilla chips and low-carb bake mix and stuff like that, or the bars or the shakes, or stick with real unprocessed food. Meat, poultry, fish, eggs, cheese, heavy cream, healthy oils and fats and vegetables. Maybe a little low-sugar fruit. Eat real food. It will make a difference. Sadly, I also find that skipping alcohol for a few days makes it easier. Contrary to popular belief, alcohol does not turn to sugar in your system, but it behaves like sugar in one very important way, and that is that so long as there is sugar in, so long as there is alcohol in your system, in your bloodstream, your body will stop burning fat until it burns through all the alcohol. So figure anytime you're drinking alcohol, you're not burning fat. A great way to knock off a few pounds in a few days is to go all meat, preferably high-fat meat, and maybe some eggs for a few days. I find that high-fat meat is actually better for this than low-fat meat. I like to use pork steaks, pork shoulder steaks. Again, eat only enough to be satisfied but not stuffed, and then don't eat again until you're actually hungry. For that matter, I just recently tried an egg fast. I eat nothing but a dozen eggs a day. I lost 5 pounds in 2.5 days with absolutely no hunger or lack of energy. My egg fast came to fewer than 1,000 calories with under 7 grams of carbohydrate per day. I ate most of those eggs boiled because I didn't want to add anything to them. When I got hysterically bored of boiled eggs, I scrambled them in 1/2 teaspoon of bacon grease to 4 eggs. Dr. Atkins recommended a fat fast as a plateau buster. 1,000 calories per day, 90% of them from straight fat. Remember I said, fat actually will make you lose more weight than protein. Almost none of the calories on your fat fast should come from carbs. It should be very close to zero carb. You will need to measure and weigh and count on a fat fast since it is also very low calorie as well as low carb. But it's reputed to be particularly effective. I have not tried it. Common foods on the fat fast include macadamia nuts, Brazil nuts, cream cheese, and avocado. And if you want to try the fat fast, I really recommend you pick up a copy of Dr. Atkins' New Diet Revolution and read Dr. Atkins' instructions carefully. So those would be my suggestions, and I hope some or all of this helps, Carol, and for everybody else. And since this is a tough subject, the plateau, this week's question, actually we have a dual question this week for Low Carb Voices. One is, what's your best plateau buster? If you've come up with a good technique for busting plateaus, let us know. And the flip side of that question is, have you noticed some particular food, medicine, beverage, or other thing that makes you stall or even gain that, you know, you think of as low carb, but it's messing you up? This is seriously valuable information for the low carb community. So folks, please call in. Call 412-385-DANA. That's 412-385-3262. If you can't write that down, you'll find the number on the show page at danaslowcarbforlife.com. One more thing. I'll be spending this coming Sunday, which will be last Sunday by the time this gets posted, at the Nutrition and Metabolism Society Symposium. Sadly, I am missing the first day of the symposium on Saturday for my mother's memorial service. Still, I will go to the Sunday symposium and take along a recorder and see if I can get some quick on-the-spot interviews to share, because this is going to be the greatest meeting of low-carb research minds in the country for the year. So that's it for this week. I'm going to go rest my poor, tortured voice. I'm sorry for all the mistakes I made in this. I'm not in great shape. Please check out the show page at danaslowcarbforlife.com and the blog at holdthetoast.com. Check us out on Facebook at danasholdthetoast.com. And call us at 412-385-DANA. That's 412-385-3262. Not only to tell us about your best plateau busters and your worst stall inducers, But to answer any of the previous Low Carb Voices questions, or just to ask a question, or tell your low carb story, we would love it if you told any of your friends who might enjoy the show to stop by the show page too at danaslowcarbforlife.com, or to subscribe to the show at iTunes. And while you're at it, if you like the show, go leave a review at iTunes, will you? Oh, and please don't forget to stop by the show page and join the discussion there, because that's a lot of fun too. So, that's it for now, and remember, until next week, stay low carb for life.
This is Dana Carpenter saying thanks for listening. If you like today's show, please leave a review at the iTunes store. You can always leave questions and comments at 412-385-DANA or write us at feedback@danaslowcarbforlife.com. For complete show notes, please visit our site at www.danaslowcarbforlife.com, and don't forget to visit the blog at holdthetoast.com. Special thanks to Disc of Light Media and our sponsor, carbsmart.com.